Good evening.
Thank
you all for being here tonight and sharing your practice with me. I've been away in Europe for about a month, and I'm so happy to be back here among all these smiling and caring faces. Our practice offers us many benefits. It improves our creativity and focus. It provides us with spiritual nourishment, but it can also help us end war. Tonight's talk is about how our practice gives us the courage to be present in moments of intense conflict, and how it teaches us the skills we can use to turn conflict into a resolution. My plan is to keep it short tonight. We have a lot to learn from each other, and I'm going to leave space for a conversation afterwards. A student once asked his master, "Why do you go on sitting like that, trying to help people when you are clearly outnumbered by at least 1,000,000,000 to 1? And the master replied, "The oak tree in the garden." And the student was confused, but the master's meaning was as clear as day. The oak tree grows in the garden, and it goes on growing in the garden, because that is its nature. The oak tree strives towards the light, even though it knows it will never reach the sun. And in our nature, underneath all the fear and conditioning that underpins our small mind, we are growing this way too, growing towards the sun. With no effort on our own part, but to uncover what's already within us, naturally we are compassionate. Without effort, we seek to alleviate suffering. We practice the bodhisattva way, sitting on our cushions, letting mind and body drift away, revealing our true nature. This sounds great, but how does just sitting quietly allow you to creatively resolve conflict? By teaching us, first, to get courageous, second, to get curious, and third, to get creative. It starts on the cushion itself. A small poll. How many of you have had your leg fall asleep while meditating? Who didn't raise their hand? Have you had your nose start to itch? Yes, okay. You know what I'm talking about. It starts with a little twinge of discomfort, but soon the ego gets involved, and the itch becomes an existential threat. Your brain is telling you, I think I have to do this. You have to scratch your nose right now or you will go crazy. The ego is telling you, there is a mortal threat to your legs. Do you hate your legs? Move them. Move them now. Small mind reacts immediately, swatting your nose, twitching your legs, restlessly, endlessly trying for comfort. Small mind sounds like this, by the way, because if it sounded small, you wouldn't pay attention to it. It's supposed to be this big, unavoidable noise in your brain. Of course, we all know that scratching doesn't make comfort, and pretty soon your mind is warning you that your ear must be scratched, or pretty soon it'll fall off and you'll perish. Your knee will go to sleep and never come awake again. And if we react thoughtlessly by moving our legs, only minutes later, your foot will fall asleep. But this is the heart of practice. Get courageous, get curious, and get creative. So let's start with courage. We dare to ask small mind, is that so? We dare to sit for just a breath or two more. Has the leg fallen off? It takes real courage to endure discomfort without immediately running away. The next step is to get curious. How big is the pain? Where exactly is it? Get really specific. Is it a tingly kind of pain, a throbbing kind of pain? Is it steady? Is it changing? We want to know everything there is to know about this pain. Where is it coming from? What does it want? The last step is to get creative. Pain and itching are neither good nor bad. They just are. We can't control when they will come. We can't control when they will arise or when they will cease. All we can do is to respond creatively instead of simply reacting to them mindlessly. Sometimes the itch goes away. Sometimes it moves somewhere else, or the pain changes. Sometimes we redirect our attention to the breath, and the mind moves on. And sometimes, after considering options, we decide to move. Excuse me. Your reactions aren't always wrong. The same training applies in situations of conflict. Conflict is neither good nor bad. It simply exists. Whether you find yourself in a conflict with your wife, or your boss, or someone on the street, you don't stop to ask, "Why me?" Instead, you apply cushion training. Let's say one day you're having dinner with your wife. You're talking about how your day went, and you say casually, "Gee, I think it'd be nice to go on vacation in Japan." And you expect her to say something like, "Oh, sure, that sounds like fun," or maybe even at the most, "You know, I'm not sure I want to go someplace I don't speak the language." Instead, she explodes at you. "That is a terrible idea. What would we do when we got there? Where would we stay? What would we eat? You obviously haven't thought this through. You never come up with anything realistic. There are so many holes in this plan, I don't even know where to start. This isn't a plan. This isn't even the seed of a plan." Immediately, small mind kicks in. She doesn't think you're doing a good job. She thinks you're a bad husband. She thinks you're incompetent. Our identity is under threat. Engage defensive maneuvers. Counterattack. She's the one who's wrong. You might even be tempted to say, "You're totally overreacting. It was just a suggestion." But this is the heart of practice. Get courageous. Get curious. And get creative. Defensiveness is a kind of running away. To be courageous, we have to hold back that initial reaction. It takes real courage not to defend yourself. It takes courage to ask small mind, "Is this really about me?" It takes courage to get curious. To be curious in this situation means to find out why her response was so extreme. Find out everything you can about her feelings. How long have you felt this way? Really listen. This will probably be very uncomfortable. You find out she's felt like this for a long time. She does all the planning in the family. What you thought were brainstorming thoughts just to have fun, she took as a serious suggestion that she plan a trip to Japan probably tomorrow. Reflect her answers back as clearly as you can without adding your own interpretation to them. And last, get creative. Use what you learn to reaffirm your fundamental connectedness. Conflict is not good or bad, it just exists. Like you, I want a relaxing getaway. I should have just said I'm brainstorming. When you take it apart like this, it sounds easy. But of course it's not. You may miss the split instant between hearing the words and acting on your reaction. But forgive yourself. Bring your attention back and try again. You'll certainly have another conflict to practice in again. There are a dozen ways to give yourself courage to foster your curiosity and to creatively resolve conflict. And not every conflict calls for your intervention. So I'd like to pause here for just a minute and ask you, what are some of the skills you use to stop your initial reactions? Some of the things that I try, I tell myself this is probably not about me. I really love this person. I wonder why they're so upset. Who else has had an experience like this?
Probably not the best technique, but I do the little rubber band snapping thing because I tend to be kind of an angry person. So
it's good to know that about
it. Helps a little bit.
Yeah.
After a while, you don't have to snap the rubber band anymore.
You can just look at it.
Automatically, yeah.
Who else has a similar approach? Motoko.
I take a deep breath. Mm.
Yeah, sometimes all it takes is 2 or 3 seconds. Carolina.
I pretend I'm Ronald Reagan and I have a Teflon mind.
Ronald Reagan and what?
I have a Teflon mind.
Oh,
it slides off.
Nothing sticks to it.
I'm old enough to get it.
Who else has a strategy they use for just avoiding getting stuck in that first moment? Oh, Dave.
One interesting kind of conflict is when you say something and the other person is immediately not only defensive, but exercising the old motto, the best defense is good offense. So you make some, what you think is neutral statement, and you get pow right in the nose. Whenever that happens to me, I always try to remember that in communication, the listener and the speaker are both responsible for what gets communicated. If you say something believing that you mean X and the other person hears Y, that's not just their fault. You haven't communicated.
Absolutely. What are some skills you can use to get curious? If you want to know all about this person's thoughts and feelings, you might ask, can you think of a particular time that happened? Or maybe, when did you start feeling this way? What are some ways that you can think of to take yourself out of the equation and just find out more? What to thought?
Needs of the person are not met in this moment.
Wonderful. We definitely all have needs and a lot of them are unmet.
Well, like the thinker, maybe she said, to be able to do what you just suggested, wouldn't it take your attention off yourself and put it on them to find something powerful? That's sometimes difficult to do, especially when you're wounded and sliding and all this kind of stuff. But to spin around and put your attention on them is a way of then entering into conversation with them. Because then maybe she had a bad day. This was just a reaction on her part. And that really forms a space whereby both of them kind of get together. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't do the X or all that kind of thing. But, yeah, switching of attention is integral to when I try to do that.
Absolutely. Giving the other person just some space to express themselves without your ego involved can be helpful. Umar.
Question for you. What do you do if you were to treat your mind the same way that you were treating your wife? What would happen to the mind, to the ego?
I think you'd find that if you treat your mind the same way you treat someone else that you're in a conflict with, you end up with meditation. You don't get attached to what the other thing is saying, what your brain is saying. You can be curious about it, but you have to let it go because it's not personal. What are some ways that you can think of to get creative? For example, for me, one of the things I like to do is to find common ground, to bring us together by saying something like you, I also want a wonderful vacation, or like you, I also had a long day and I could really use a rest. And this helps to remind the other person that you are fundamentally connected.
Something that comes up for me is asking the person, is this a good time to talk?
Oh, what a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
Yes. Has anyone had an experience where a conflict went off the rails really fast and you can identify that minute when you should have stepped back and taken a deep breath? Yeah. Anyone had one of those today? I had the Japan conversation 2 days ago. Luckily, our lives offer us plenty of opportunities to practice in this kind of conflict. And if you practice on the small scale between you and a person that you love, this is easy. And when you begin to take steps farther out from yourself, towards strangers, sometimes the most courageous thing you can do is to offer someone else a smile. Turns out, this isn't always widely accepted in other cultures. I tried for almost 3 weeks to get someone to smile at me in London, and they wouldn't. No one would smile at me, and I found out why. I know, I couldn't believe it. I found out why. I was walking through Covent Garden, and someone smiled at me, and I smiled back at them, and they said, "Oh, hello, sir, would you like to buy something?" And I'm sure all these people had been watching me walk up the street towards them, smile at them, just waiting for me to assault them with some request to sign a petition or something like that. But I was just trying to be friendly. But I think if we take care of the people we meet in everyday life, the cashiers, people who have positions that we don't necessarily want for ourselves, our waitresses, our waiters, I mean, these are the people who may have very lonely lives. These are the people who may become radicalized some other way. And if we can even extend a small amount of our sangha to these people, it may make a real difference for them. And if we are ever so lucky as to be in a situation where we can make a bigger difference, then all of this training will add up. And if we are ever called upon to mediate in a real conflict, we may have the courage to take ourselves out of it. And that said, I don't expect any of us to be heroes. You may only have one opportunity in your life to do this, and the rest of them you may let go, because none of us wants to end up as a casualty or a statistic, and no one wants to become a Jehovah's Witness knocking on doors, telling people that they're wrong, and waiting to get in a conflict that way. You'll have plenty of times to get in a conflict your own way. So I wanted to end with this. I hope you remember that not every situation or every conflict calls for courage or for your intervention, but I hope that your practice will give you courage to do it when you need to. Our quiet, simple practice can be the antidote to the poison of hatred everywhere. We fulfill our bodhisattva vows by spreading courage or kindness with courage, curiosity, creativity, and compassion. Thank you. Are there any announcements tonight?